Hi, this is Jeff Altman, the Big Game Hunter, and you're listening to and perhaps watching as a hangout, No BS Hiring Advice. This is a time where I like to spend some time talking with you about some element of staffing, hiring, recruiting, because I believe that hiring staff doesn't have to be as hard, difficult, painful, or take as long as it does. It's just many of you have systems in place that interfere with what you ostensibly say you want to do, which is hire great people for your organization. Now, most of the time, I'm talking with you about my opinions about job search. But I thought on this show, I would change that up and bring in a guest to speak with. Glenn Gefkin works with businesses and individuals, strengthening their culture, core values, communications, and sense of purpose. He's a cultural expert, blogger, and author of a terrific book I'm going to hold up for you called Shift, and Indigenous Principles for Corporate Change. Glenn, my friend, welcome to Jobs. I'm sorry, I was talking about my other show. Welcome to No BS Hiring Advice. Thanks for making the time.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. Pleasure to be on your show.
Thank you. And I want to acknowledge right off the bat that, you know, I've got strong opinions about fit and how organizations try to hire for fit, which I don't think they're capable of doing it in the way that they do it. And to define what I see happen most of the time, a hiring manager is looking for someone who fits. But unfortunately, because there are no objective measures that are being used to evaluate people, most of the time fit translates into, hey, he's really good, or I think I like her. And as a result, you know, individual biases that a manager might have or an HR person might have get institutionalized within an organization. So that's my bias. I want to acknowledge that up front. And how does culture work into this fit notion? Does it fit in at all?
Yeah.
Why do I use fit as part of the definition?
Sure. Well, I think the way that you characterized fit kind of almost answers the question in and of itself, in the sense that the context of what that means is kind of vague. And it can really vary to the individual, to their own personal tendencies and proclivities, for example. Culture is really about values more than anything else. So when I say hire for culture, I'm really saying hire for values. So that means that you have to first, as an organization, you have to have established what your values really are. And what I mean by that is, what are the overarching values that are held in common within the organization? And so there are many companies out there, large companies, medium-sized companies, and so on. You can go to their website and you can see where it says something like, you know, we're all about trust and respect, integrity, and yada, yada, yada. But what I'm getting at with regard to values is, a company needs to do more than just say, we're all about integrity and respect and so forth. Because, of course, everyone's going to say that, right? What core values really are about is they're about the personalized, the unique expression. But what does integrity look like for a particular company? What does valuing customers look like for a particular customer, for a particular company? What does trust look like? What does compassion look like? What does evolution look like? And I could go on and on and on about all kinds of different values that companies establish. For example, the work that...
I'm going to interrupt you for a second just to make sure I understand how you're defining it. Yeah. And it sounds like the way you're presenting it is the translation of the mission of the organization into day-to-day life. Do I have that right, or do you want to correct me in some way?
That's a pretty good way of it's a pretty good way of saying it. The only thing I would add is just to say that it's a personalized way of expressing a value. For example, one company that I recently worked with to help them develop their core values, they wanted to have a core value. One of them was innovation, and so they wrote this statement that was like, "We're not just out of the box; we crush the box." And that statement was kind of like expressed some of the sort of the verve and the sassiness of the particular culture of that company. So it said they were about innovation, but it really kind of played out to their unique personality. And so it's a process of really developing core values. It's not just something where the CEO says, you know, here's a list and this is what we're about. It needs to be very collective. It's an ongoing process. Once they're really developed in such a way where they're collective, where everyone feels like they're part of the development of those core values, then you inculcate them into your organization. You don't just put them in a shelf, or in a drawer, which does happen. Plenty of organizations that will hire consultants and have them come in and do a whole process and develop core values. And then they're like, okay, this is great. Here's our core values. And they don't do anything with them. So even just putting them on your website isn't enough. Putting an employee manual, that's great, but not enough. You got to actually talk about them. You got to include 10 minutes in the beginning of a staff meeting, for example, where you say, hey, core value number 4, let's talk about it. Do we feel like we're doing a good job of this core value? Where are we falling short? Or actually, do we feel like we're doing really good at this? Is this like one of our strengths? Let's talk about it for 10 minutes before we get on to the rest of our business. So we encourage people to keep the values alive so that they're not just sort of beautiful platitudes that are hanging out there that sounds good on the website, but it's something that people are really engaged with on a regular daily basis. So they're living in the organization.
An organization that has a congruent expression of their core value, mm-hmm. that's consistent between, the plaque up on the wall and its behavior.
Right.
How does that wind up affecting or benefiting them from a hiring perspective? How does that work for them there?
Very significantly, actually. I mean, this is like I wrote a blog about it. It's like the core values. It's like the moat that surrounds your hiring process. You filter everyone through those core values, and it has a greater, more powerful degree of ensuring that the people that come into your organization are going to be consistent with the culture that you actually desire and aspire toward. So the first step that you would do is you would share them with every single candidate that's looking to be employed with your company. And then when they come in for an interview, you have a very open conversation with them about it. Certainly you would go through your questions of behavioral scenarios and how would you handle this and so on. And those are always, very important questions to ask. But then also to just say, hey, have you read the core values? What'd you think about them? What can you say about them? Do you have a favorite? Do you not like them? Ask them some open-ended questions and get them talking. And so say somebody says, oh, I like core value number 6. Oh, can you maybe think of an example of when you might have been challenged in your career with whatever that core value might be about? And tell us about it. And to really get people talking about the values and looking not just for the words, because, of course, hiring managers, they're always looking for, like, are people really being authentic? Are they just telling me what I want to hear? Are they really being authentic? But core values is, like, one of those things that gives a person interviewing, I feel, a more accurate way of seeing through to a person's authenticity, because if they're really excited about those values, you're going to feel it. It's going to be palpable. So often what we find with companies when they switch over, when they develop their core values and switch over to start interviewing based on core values, they find candidates that say, I've been looking for a company like this for a long time. It really embodies these kind of values. I would really be excited and honored to work for your company. Like we hear things like that from our clients that we work with. It elevates the whole conversation to a level that's a little more heart-based.
Does it work with a staff of all levels? Because I'm a boomer I'm not 20 anymore. Let's put it that way. Yeah. And the impact of all this that I read and I experience is that this is attractive to millennials, mm-hmm. and whatever that generation is beneath them, that they're still very much immersed in wanting to work for organizations where they can make a difference. Mm-hmm. So I get values in that environment, or with that population. But I also think in terms of older ones and how often, with rare exceptions, and obviously there are exceptions, mm-hmm. that the value of the corporation is let's make the most amount of money fastest, and we want people who are who will dive right in and get immersed in that culture, you know, the culture of the mercenary or the culture of the of profit, and not really challenge us from an emotional space. So I'm just curious whether in your work or in the work of others that you follow, you see that this works across the board.
That's a pretty deep question, Jeff. There's a lot there. There's a lot there in that question. Definitely millennials, they want to change the world. So when they're interviewed or, you know, approaching a company and they're really clear about their values and what they're about, that really gets them jazzed up. Millennials, people that are getting, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, and so on, they've been, shall we say, more acculturated in a business model ideology, if you will, that's been very entrenched in this notion that, you know, Milton Friedman economics, that business exists fundamentally to produce profit. And so what we're saying here is that businesses ultimately exist for people, for the people that work there, for the people that are going to use the products and services. We're in the people business. We're not in the money business. The profit is just what comes as sort of a fringe benefit when we do what we're supposed to be doing, which is creating meaningful products and services for people that we actually really care about, products that matter. When we're doing that kind of work and when we're building our organization and our culture around values and striving every day to do the best we can to model those values, then we're really creating something amazing, and profitability is just something that is naturally going to flow from that. And there is actually a fair amount of growing research that points to the fact that companies that are values-based are actually significantly more profitable than companies that are simply oriented around profitability. So it's actually good for business to do it this way. And the way to enhance it and expand it and make it even just grow more so is through the hiring process. So everyone coming in the door is totally on board with what you're about. And not just on board, but since there's something that gives the candidates a sense of feeling that they can come and join and be a part of something bigger than themselves, they're going to be like jumping out of bed in the morning, like excited to go to work. And that's what you want, because that's where you have a true entrepreneurial, innovative culture and strategy at your organization.
So let me pose a scenario for you. You have a values-oriented organization meeting a mercenary, I'm in it to make a lot of money, but has the right skills that the values organization is looking for. Mm-hmm. Does the organization need to reconcile and bite the bullet, as you will, and accept this individual, or do they just keep looking?
You asked some great questions, Jeff. They need to keep looking. They need to actually pass on that person who might have an impeccable resume, you know, years of this and credentials here, and, you know, they've accomplished these things and so on, and they look amazing, but there just isn't the alignment of values. Thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate you coming in. Move on. You'd be better off by finding someone with half as much experience who's truly aligned with what you're about as an organization. It's going to be jazzed about coming to work for you, because they'll be able to catch on and learn, and you can train and they can grow in it. Maybe not if we're talking about brain surgery, you know, they got to have those credentials, right? Or if we're talking about law, if you don't have a law degree, well, you know, I mean, we're done right there, right? So, but most other jobs, you know, if we're talking about marketing, for example, we're talking about sales, we're talking about so many of the service industry types of positions, you know, if they don't have quite the level of experience that you need, they can come along. If they're really jazzed and excited about your organization, they're going to do whatever they have to do to learn and mount that learning curve quickly.
I happen to agree with that attitude. It's one of the frustrations I have in my work as a headhunter and working with organizations that make the sacrifice. Mm-hmm. They do it way too often, bringing on people who You know, they're desperate for the skill because the hiring manager feels behind the gun. I'll use that example. You know, they work in IT. They've got a project to deliver to some group, some line of business, whatever. And at the end of the day, they need that skill. Without that skill, they're not going to provide the service promised on time and within budget.
Sure.
And we're staring at a person who has fear for their job. You know, if the impact of that failure to hire that the right person results in that other group being hurt, you know, lo and behold, people lose jobs for that reason. So I hear and I watch and I listen to this dance that hiring managers tell me about all the time, and the frustration that they feel. And it sounds like, and here's one of those good questions again, Glenn, it sounds like there's an incongruence with what they profess is the cultural value and how the behavior is. How am I doing?
Really good. Your questions are very insightful. Culture absolutely has to be authentic. And that's why the core values process is really valuable, because it's an opportunity to engage in a conversation about values and what we stand for as an organization, and to invite criticism. So somebody says, okay, we want to be about equality and diversity in the organization. And so let's talk about that. You know, where are we good with that? Where are we falling down with that? And it gives an opportunity for people to say, well, I don't think we're very diverse. And okay, how could we be better at this? And so they can start having that conversation. And what potentially can bubble to the surface with that is not just that that we should have a value of, say, diversity in our organization, but that we want to have the value, that we want to aspire to that value, and that it's an organization-wide conversation that hones down to when you finally get to that place. Could take a month, could take 6 months, could take a year, however long it takes, when you finally hone down to that place where you've got your list and however many core values that they are. And you can say, okay, these are the values that we're saying collectively as an organization we are aspiring to. And so then you inculcate it, then you take the steps forward. And the theme it is, Jeff, you know, you've got the banners or the poster boards in your break room. It's on your website. You're talking about it in your staff meetings, however it is that you're kind of folding them into your organization. The organization itself is putting itself on the hook. It's saying, we're about these core values, so we're inviting your feedback when we're doing well and when we're falling short. So the more that conversation happens, it gives the organization the ability to continually, gradually, incrementally move towards a more authentic expression of those core values.
So I'm going to give you one of those scenarios again. Okay. You know, in a lot of organizations, when they have the core values conversation, these are organizations that are hierarchical in nature. Mm-hmm. So they go off, the management goes off on retreat, they play some golf, they meet in a conference room for a few hours in the morning, maybe they get together for dinner, and they actually do some business where they discuss core values. Mm-hmm. And then they come back and say, good news, we've got core values. Hosanna! How does this work its way down and thus affect, or should it work its way down? Or I know the ideal is everyone's collaborative in the discussion, but my experience is that isn't how it works.
Yeah, no, it's not. And I was involved in one very large corporation that hired in a bunch of consultants. This was at the time, I think the company had over 4,000 employees, and they did these group meetings all throughout the company in the different regions. It's all over the country. And like anyone who wanted to could join these meetings. We did a little thing with post-it notes where, you know, you get little groups and you write your things in the post-it notes and it goes up on the board. And then, you know, you kind of each group meeting over about 2.5 hours, you kind of filter it down. You've got your values, and then you might have 40 or 50 of these different meetings going on around the company. And then those all get filtered down and coalesce together. And then some, like 3-4 weeks later, you're in a big auditorium, and now it's the, you know, it's the top leadership on a stage taking what they feel is the crystallization that's come from the organization. And then they just sort of, in this instance, they just took it and rearranged it the way they wanted and changed it the way they wanted and said, okay, there's our core values. And everybody walked away kind of scratching their head like, I don't think that's what we were talking about. You know, so there was no like kind of alignment between upper management and shall we say the rank and file. So, you know, the way we advise to do it is actually sort of a three-step process. One is the upper leadership does definitely have to establish authentically what they would like them to be. And then so does the rest of the company. And then you see how they meld together and where they don't. And where they don't is, I mean, this process itself can be really healing for an organization to see where the disconnect is. What are the people saying? What are the leadership saying? The larger organization is, the more they tend to be disconnected. So this process of putting these things together has an opportunity to provide some major insights and healing in the organization. And the top leadership has to resist the urge to be hierarchical and say, well, you know, I want it to be this way, and you've got to have this, because that in itself is going to defeat the whole process of the core values. It's got to be collective.
And folks, I've been spending a lot of time talking about this core values process rather than the hiring process, mm-hmm. because I think there's work that needs to be done before this is applied into recruiting and hiring. I've been spending the time talking with Glenn about the remediation process. How do you bring core values into your firm? Because the hiring process is pretty easy. Hi, these are our core values. What do you relate to? Where would you struggle with them? And, you know, opening the conversation up as part of the interview process. Do I have that one right too?
Absolutely, yes.
Cool. So I want to investigate something with you. I promised that my role was going to be the curious one.
Okay.
When we talked before the show. Indigenous Principles for Corporate Change is the subtitle to Shift.
Yeah.
How did you become interested in Indigenous peoples and learn their principles? What's your background?
I've married into Indigenous families twice now, and separately was adopted into a Navajo family in early 2002. Starting from about 95, I began an immersion into Indigenous culture. 97, I was invited into the ceremonies, and I was living in Southern California and taking a lot of trips out to Arizona and New Mexico on the Navajo reservation. And so I was beginning to become more deeply immersed into the traditions. And in the same time, in parallel, I was, you know, had this life in the corporate world, one foot in the corporate world, one foot in this Indigenous world with these ancient traditions. And I just found this amazing congruency. I just found that I was getting better at doing business. And when I looked at why, it had more to do with what I was learning from the ceremonies and the elders and the Indigenous traditions than any business books I was reading necessarily, or the business experience itself. I was becoming a better communicator. I was looking at things differently. It's becoming more creative and visionary. And I was much calmer. You know, it's much like in more of a kind of a serene place about how to approach things and the whole process. And so I just got this kind of crazy notion that there was something of value from Indigenous culture into business. And I kind of kept it to myself for a number of years before that book just sort of needed to come out. And what it really is it's about a returning to original values, because really all of us, even those of us that are, you know, so we say Anglo, everyone is Indigenous. If you go back far enough in our lineage, all of us at one point in time, our ancestors lived in an Indigenous way, which means living in connection with nature, in balance and harmony with nature, in a tribal society where everyone works for a common good, which, by the way, is very much like a company. When we all work for a company, we're all working, theoretically anyway, for the same goal. We want the company to be successful. We have a particular vision around that company that produces something, whether it be a product or a service. This isn't much different than a tribe, for example, and how it exists. And there's some very important aspects to Indigenous culture which lends profound value for our modern society. It's and again, back to referencing Milton Friedman economics, I feel has really done a disservice to our broader modern culture in general. It's like when we say that business only exists or primarily or fundamentally exists to deliver profits, we're essentially diminishing ourselves. We're essentially saying that the only reason we go to work every day is to increase the numbers and the digits on spreadsheets somewhere, and that's it. And I don't think that's really it. I think really all of us, even the boomers, shall we say, who've been conditioned to a particular broader corporate culture over a long period of time, and it's kind of ingrained in their thinking. I think if you get deep enough in the 99% of the people that are in the business world, you will find that they would really much rather be about values. They would much rather be involved in producing a product or service that matters, that's important, that's meaningful, that uplifts people's lives or gives them some greater convenience or benefit or efficiency or, you know, something that they can come home with at the end of the night and feel good about the work that they did. People want that. But when we're continually being inculcated with this value system of profit is king, then we keep diminishing what we're doing. And so in that diminishment, it's sort of like, as people say, it's like kind of soul crushing. So indigenous society, on the other hand, everything is about intention and purpose. There's a lot of people nowadays get very excited, somewhat romantic about being a part of Native American ceremonies, for example. They want to come and they want to know, oh, what does this mean? What does this represent? Because it seems so beautiful and colorful and lyrical, the way these ceremonies are conducted. And, you know, we explain these things to newcomers and, you know, what the protocols are and what they're doing and why and so on. But the point that's actually more important than simply knowing at this point in the ceremony you do this or that is that everything in the ceremony is intentional, and it's not about the ceremony. It's about practicing intentionality so we can take that out into our life and be intentional about everything that we do in our life. Like, for example, what's one of the most spiritually nourishing things a person can do, which is to nourish an infant. The feeding, the bathing, the clothing, every aspect about it, when it's done with purity, it's done with pure love. It's like every action, even changing a diaper, powdering and everything, it's all with love. I mean, you know, we wouldn't enjoy doing that to each other as adults, but to a baby, it's like really different. It's very intentional. So it becomes almost like a spiritual practice for mothers and even fathers to do these sorts of things. And so indigenous culture teaches us these things, the way you prepare a meal, the way you walk, the way you dance, the way you work, that you're intentional in your work, that you're thinking about what's the purpose, who's going to be receiving the benefit from this product I'm making or the service I'm doing, and what's the experience I want those people to have from that product or service. You know, I want to better their lives, to train ourselves to be intentional in this way. So that's just kind of like one aspect of indigenous culture that has very profound implications for how to do business in a very meaningful way. You know?
And interestingly, you know, I just want to interject and say, organizations that are committed to operating at an elite level, people who are committed to conducting themselves at an elite level, all ascribe to these principles. You know, they may not recognize them as being indigenous, but being culturally congruent with the mission of an organization and serving the individuals that they're selling product and or service to is the way of an elite firm. And as a result, from a hiring perspective, because I want to bring it back to that, finding individuals who will fit in with that culture becomes paramount. And I think the one thing that may be hard for individuals to pick up on is, you know, developing the language to express it well. Because the organization may have taken the time to work on this, but the individual may struggle with the vocabulary to express them well, because unfortunately these days it's atypical.
You're hitting the nail on the head. You know, Seth Godin, Tony Shea, Gary Hamel, Simon Sinek, you know, and so many other thought leaders out there, Jim Collins, all these things that they're writing about, speaking about, talking about, they actually are incorporating indigenous values into what they're writing about. They just don't really know that they're indigenous values, but they are. And like you say, elite organizations are already engaging in these kinds of value systems. So what I'm just doing, or what I have done, is codify 13 principles that are pretty universal from indigenous culture into my book, Shift. And then my wife and partner and I, and she's indigenous, and we do workshops and we do mentoring and coaching and so on with people to help them to integrate these value systems into their business and using core values to do it. And you also touch on a really important point, Jeff, which is the vocabulary. It's like people change their majors in college like 2.5 times on average, you know, undergraduate students nowadays. And very little time and attention is actually put into making those decisions. It's kind of random almost. It's like, oh, I don't know, I'll do this or I'll try this. Or next semester, I'm going to change my major to that. But they don't actually have courses on discovering their purpose and what they're really internally driven to do. So we don't really have like a vocabulary in our society. It's not taught in the school system. It's not taught in high school or college or grad school about purpose, about values. We don't have a general vocabulary around that, which is why engaging in a core values process is so critical for the success of a long-term sustained success of an organization, because the ongoing conversation of core values is going to help everyone, leadership all the way down, to develop that language.
Glenn, we're coming up on the end of our time with one another. Is there anything that in my lack of skillfulness I haven't covered that you want to make sure everyone knows today?
You've offered a lot of very insightful questions. The only thing I would add to that is just to say that core values is aspirational, right? It's like none of us are perfect as people. We don't always get everything right in our life. You know, we say something to hurt somebody, or, you know, we falter on a commitment or an obligation. Well, companies are the same thing. You know, they're not perfect. And if you establish those core values, thinking that, okay, we have to perfectly adhere to them, that isn't going to happen. Rather, what you do is you say, these are the core values that we aspire to. And we're going to have the courage to communicate this out to the world, that this is what we're about. And we're going to do our best every day to move towards that ideal of those values.
And probably be honest enough to admit failings at times in aligning behavior with core value, which in this day and age, if someone makes a mistake, man, they get lambasted. We understand why, because people are hurt. They feel disappointed. They feel dismissed. They feel violated. You know, we both live in a town where, some guys, shall we say, did some inappropriate things on their blog. And at the end of the day, you know, a lot of people were hurt and disappointed. And, you know, the impact was painful. So I understand the aspirational quality, and it's tough in our culture for people to forgive. And I'm not saying forget, but to forgive.
That's a very good point.
Thank you. The book is Shift, Indigenous Principles for Corporate Change. Glenn, how can people find out about you, the work that you do? How can they best reach you?
My website for my wife and I is balancedis.com. So BALANCEDIS, balanced with a D is.com. And I have a blog there. It's called the Heart and Mind Blog. And it's all about integrating heart with the mind, which is very much an indigenous concept itself. So they can sign up on my blog. And Maria also writes a blog called Transcending Single Stories, which is about transcending the stories that limit us. And we do occasionally have workshops that we offer. We've got mentoring programs. We can come into companies and do core values processes with you and help you to develop those, to suss them out and have them be really unique and contain a lot of energy and authenticity for your organization.
Super. Glenn, thank you. And folks, we'll be back next time with more No BS hiring advice. I'm Jeff Alpin, the Big Game Hunter, and if you'd like help with finding people for your organization, reach out to me by email or phone. My email address is jeffalton@thebiggamehunter.us. My phone number is 646-374-8656. I have also a lot of information on my website, which is, of course, thebiggamehunter.us. There's stuff there that you can watch, listen to, or read that will help you be more effective with your recruiting process. It will also, if you're a job hunter, help you with your job search as well. So, forgot to mention, if you like the show, subscribe in iTunes. You know, be one of the people who follows the show in iTunes. Give it 5 stars and a great rating. We'd really appreciate it. It'll help other people discover the show. I'm Jeff Altman. Take care.